Hello and welcome to the Edgy Futurist podcast. Another episode. I think is this going to be our second to last episode of this year? We've got our big round table next week, and then the summer break.
Yeah. I think it might well be. And it's the last one, and we've no Stephen.
Yeah, Stephen. I don't even know where he is, to be honest.
He's in London. That's where he is, in London. He's travelling back this evening, I think. So he's been down in the Big Smoke, which we've been laughing about, haven't we? Because it's been lovely sunny up here in the north. It's been baking, as we would say, in Lancashire. It's cracking the flags. But it's been pouring down in London. So keep laughing at it.
Yeah. He's been down with his mates down at the Matt's PN.
Yeah, Matt PN South. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think I was on the podcast last week, was I?
We had Les Macbeth.
It
wasn't Les Macbeth last week.
We didn't have one last week.
No, we did the round table, didn't we, with the guys from Strive.
Yes, Ben Q Strive. Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, so we talked about the classroom technology and the front of class display stuff, and whether that was, and how that can be still useful in the physical classroom. So that was great. Yeah, but Les Macbeth was the week before. So yeah, you've not been on a podcast for a few weeks, Dan, but that's because you're an international superstar now. Hong Kong, Florida. If anybody who doesn't follow Dan on LinkedIn, get on. Dan's posted today. I think he was trying to be Billy Big Bollocks and trying to tell everybody how important he is. All the different places he's speaking.
Somebody else said that to me today. I was talking to Dieter in the Netherlands.
Yeah. Today. Oh, just another global jet setter. Well.
Yeah. The whole idea was to say, right, come to these events, but
I'm joking. I'm only jealous because I only get to go to South Africa, but you're going to America and Hong Kong. And
yeah, I mean, it's July in Florida. I mean, I'm a redhead with fair skin. Yes. I'm not going to be seeing much of it. I'm going to be inside with aircon, protecting myself if anything. So it'll be good. I guess should we just jump into it?
Because we've got I think we should definitely.
We've got a lot of people have heard of the big announcements from Apple over the last week with Apple getting into virtual reality, augmented reality. Some big news. So we're welcoming back a previous guest, Melissa McBride, who from Sophia, who joined us. I can't remember when, but it feels like probably about a year ago when she was joined by two of her colleagues literally within the metaverse, which was a very interesting experience and a one-off for us. So Melissa's back on our own. We're going to be talking about the future of education, her own podcast that she started on LinkedIn, and artificial intelligence and how that kind of links in with virtual reality, augmented reality. And then, let's see where it goes. So please welcome Melissa. How are you?
Hello, everyone. Yeah, really great to be back. You had me chuckling there backstage. So, you know, as I say, things are moving very fast, you know, which is great. But honestly, thanks to be back. It's hard to believe that it's been over a year, right? And how much has changed.
I was just guessing. Has it literally been over a year?
Yeah,
has it? Wow.
Exactly. Oh, a little bit over, but I mean, just things move so quickly, right? Back then, we were still calling it the metaverse. I think now we're calling it spatial computing. But
interesting. I want to get into that.
Yeah.
Because are we, or is that just because what Apple decided to call it?
I think my view is we're really talking about immersive education, right? In all its form. You know, you can use lots of buzzwords, metaverse, because it helps to shape people's understanding of what you're talking about. But I think certainly the journey that we've all been on in the last 8 months, you know, before that, is actually this is just much, much more than just VR, right? Like this is actually an entire ecosystem of tools that are accessible and are really going to change the way that we access education in all forms, you know, whether it's formal education or whether it's adult education. But equally how we create it, right? And I think that's what's another really exciting part of this entire immersive space. And yes, you know, you can do it in 3D, But, you know, as I say, I think be careful what you call it. It's a case of, I think, what opportunities does it open up?
There's a lot of people who kind of AI kind of took the limelight within the technology sector over the last 6 months. Blockchain, Bitcoin seems to have just faded into the background while all that kind of regulation's going on. And then VR seemed to as well. All those efforts from Mark Zuckerberg at Meta and just seemed to have kind of fizzled out a bit. And a lot of people were saying, well, is this hope, are these dreams of a future of the metaverse now just essentially dead? Will they not be realized because people don't really want it? What's your view on that? I think I know what your view is, but yeah. Is it dead? Is the metaverse dead?
I think it's actually just really being built, right? It's my view is for those teams, you know, across lots of sectors, not just education, that have been harnessing this new technology, you know, that we have and is rapidly becoming, you know, more at scale. Those that are really in it to build solutions, you know, for some of the challenges that sectors face have been continually quietly building without having, you know, the kind of spotlight. And that's fantastic. It's great to have the platform, but it can bring challenges as long, you know, as well as opportunities. So I think those that are really seeing this new technologies as a way of augmenting, you know, what we can do, what we can't do, what we've never been able to do, and what's possible in the future, those teams continue to build, you know? And really for us, like, it's been, I think, just such a incredible space to continue to incubate, you know, and to have real use cases. You know, in my case, we have a fantastic team of educators who've just embraced it and just loving the experience, you know. And again, real kids really building on Unity and exploring in virtual realms without having to kind of justify. And I think that's probably what's been going on as the world decides, you know, what is this new way of living, working, socializing, learning going to look like? And again, we can have some predictions, but tech is moving so quick, right? Like you said, 6 months ago, what were we thinking we were going to be doing now? Probably for a lot of us, not as fast as we can do it now, maybe, you know? And I think that that's just part of this technology revolution, really, that we're experiencing.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that if anybody were to go back over our podcast over the last, particularly probably the last 3 years, they'd mm-hmm. see that we jumped all over Web3 and we're talking about crypto. We talked about NFTs, like we went big on NFTs. Some of us went bigger than others in terms of investing in NFTs. And then, like, I went down the Decentraland and buying a virtual space in there, and we were going to have a nightclub in there, and we were going to do all sorts of cool stuff. And then, and like Dan said, it seemed to go really quiet, and not necessarily quiet, but almost be drowned out by the noise that's come around AI. And that, and interestingly, Apple doing this announcement and bringing this back in, and many of our people who are connected with you on LinkedIn, they'll know that you changed your job title for a few days, didn't you?
A little. You have to actually poke fun at, you know, at the bear a little bit, yep, don't you? And absolutely. I wasn't the only one, but you do, because we know that it's going to happen.
Yeah. And this idea, I suppose, for a lot of people, like this idea of a metaverse, spatial computing, or I'm listening to an interview with Michio Kaku. I don't know if you've listened to his thoughts around quantum computing and what that's going to mean from this spatial realm and whatever else. I think it's a lot of people are like, is this really going to do what the people are talking about? Is anybody other than gamers going to put their headsets on? And is it going to really change the way we do? And again, I think we have very similar views on that. But for those people who are skeptics in that world, how would you respond to that?
I think if I, you know, listen, we've lived as a society in the physical realm for so long, right? And then 2019 happened and we were everything was online. And since then, you know, and education is no different, right? Since then, it's become unwound. So we're always going to have this play between, is it physical or is it online and actually how do we augment, right? Like how do we bridge that? And I think this is what's really going to I think be a key driver in this, is that the abilities of these technologies, obviously we'll get into Apple a bit more and, you know, why is it Pro and not Apple Vision Air, which probably will come as well, but it'll help to close the gap, I think. And that's really important, right? Between online specifically for education and offline, and how can we use these technologies to augment that and to create this bridge. So it isn't one or the other, it can be both, but equally it can open up how we move towards a mandate that has the potential to enable access for kids who've never had the opportunity to before. And I think that's a really special mandate, right? The education for all piece. I think a lot of us can see it in front of us and feel like we could reach out and grab it if we get this right. And I think that's going to be probably the biggest driver for education, because let's face it, there are, and we've talked about this before, there are significant challenges, you know, you know, climate, we can list them: climate, conflict, just a lack of, it's actually not a lack of teachers. There's a lack of educators who are willing to work in the traditional confines of the institutions that, you know, make up our society. They still love teaching. So these things are coming at a kind of tipping point, right? This is the flipping point for education. And I think tech is a solution. So why do we latch on to these things? I think, to be honest, because we all hope, if we're really passionate about education, that this is the thing that changes a sector. So no, it wasn't crypto, but maybe it's the NFT creator economy. Okay, no, maybe it's Web3, but I actually think like we are really here because we're talking about an entire ecosystem of stuff, not just a headset, not just, you know, AI and large language. We're talking about the whole thing coming together and fueling each different part of the ecosystem. So it's like a halo effect, I think. And that's something to be really excited about.
Yeah. It's interesting you say education for all. Mm. It's $3,500.
Of course it is. You know, listen, Pro is, they've not just released Apple Reality One or whatever people thought, right? The Pro is a statement, because Pro is for professionals. And Apple need to create, you know, the collaborator ecosystem that we've seen them do before with, you know, apps for your iPhone and then obviously your watch and all of these things. So the price tag is large, but it's designed, I believe, to stop a mass market adoption before the digital content is ready. We can go back to great Canadian Marshall McLuhan, who said, you know, the medium is the message and it's all about content because it is king. And I think Apple understand that they need to create the creator's ecosystem to put great content on there. And then you'll start to see, you know, the headsets come down. But an education is a really fascinating one, because what people automatically jump to, I think, and I've been ahead, so I know what happens when you look at, you know, your kind of financial planning, is if we think about how much spend is allocated to things which are wasteful. So we build giant blocks, science labs, but actually, like, how many kids are those for? You know, we spend huge amounts, you know, and it's accelerating on recruitment of staff. And then when those staff don't stay and they go on sick leave, right? All this supply, right? There's so much churn and spend in education that if we just are prepared to think a little bit differently about how we allocate that spend, I think the cost, the true cost of it, starts to really, really come down in terms of what you can do and how you can deploy the tech to change the way that we, as you say, that kids access content, they engage with content, they learn. And actually, if we're honest, like, Apple, I think, is so a fascinating story, because we have like iPad baby generation. I have four of them in my own house, right? Like, Apple is, they just grow up. So they're digitally native, they're spatially native, they're Apple native. Like, I would say there'd be very few children nowadays who don't know how to navigate their way around Apple devices. So who is driving this story, right? The Apple Pro is to convince people, not like us, because we're cool dinosaurs, but like the really, really extinct versions that are out there, you know, that this is a way not to revolutionize, but it's an evolution, I think, Apple presented. So it's not all in. They've addressed that. But, you know, if we think about who actually is going to be using this tech, they're already there, right? Young people, 64 million daily logins on Roblox, 29 million Minecraft users who are all in, you know, primary and secondary age. And I think that is who will drive this forward. So it is expensive. It's not designed for mass market yet. The Apple Vision Air will come when I think the content's there.
And interestingly as well, to the Minecraft point, obviously there was a news story in the UK recently about that young lad who sold his Minecraft server and bought his mum a house, which just like a teenage lad that was just absolutely blew me away. And I just thought, this level of entrepreneurship that young people can do when they've got freedom to be able to do stuff like that, which is just phenomenal. And the other thing that was interesting I read was about when the first Mac came out, the first Macintosh computer came out, and its price point, it's very similar in terms of that it was like, whoa, nobody's going to pay for this. and people did. And I'm having conversations with people who are like, 20s, 30s, who are going, yeah, I'll get one. Because people don't, whether it's right or wrong, people don't throw and say, I tell you what, I'm not gonna spend 12, 13, £1,500 on a phone, because they do. And the question is about how we make this.
Absolute Nokia snake days.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
You wouldn't have imagined that ever, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder whether we've got to get to a point of, we talk a lot on the podcast about tequity, or this idea of getting this fairness and doing the right thing around that. So how do we, I suppose, support that in this, what seemingly looks almost elitist because of the price point, but also is this just for the kids who, let's call a spade a spade. There's people out there now who are advertising for phenomenal jobs about heads of AI in schools, and there's phenomenal things that are happening in terms of the private sector that are having AI conferences and doing all this kind of stuff. But how many mainstream down the road community primary schools are actually going to deal with this when they can't even get enough Chromebooks for the kids that are in the classroom? And so we've got to get that balance, haven't we? Or certainly get to that.
I love talking to you guys because I'm like, which point do I want to go first? Right, first, my message is you can start with Apple Vision Pro, anybody, today. You don't need a headset. You just need to have a Wi-Fi connection and a computer so you can download Unity. And it's free for educators. They have a huge amount, you know, free courses. As a matter of fact, I was just looking at the educator course at the moment, you know, which is for educators who have no idea but believe that they can gift their kids. And that doesn't matter what kind of school you're in. With the ability to start to build. And to your point about Minecraft, I'm not surprised because children natively just work in three dimensions, you know, more so than we can now. And the ability for them to begin to understand like a piece of tech, and I don't even think it's like, I think gone are the days, and maybe Dan, you know more than I do on this, but it's gone are the days of like, you need to learn Python. Because actually, do you? With what's coming and what's out there, like, do we really need to know how to do that? Or can AI help us with that, right? So Unity visual scripting, children just have the most immense ability to create, right? And if you start that journey, they're already becoming part of the ecosystem. So it isn't just a headset. It's an entire new way of doing things. And, you know, funny enough about entrepreneurship at the school, the senior school, we started with an entrepreneurship project that we thought would take the spring term. And actually it's just continued to roll along and get bigger. And like the ideas that the kids have come up with. And now they're to a point where, you know, I sat for 5 hours of 60 pitches. And like, I was in the inside virtual space, right? That's where they hosted. I was blown away by what these kids have come up with. And, you know, a lot of them are thinking about how can they take their ideas, how can they develop their brand, but actually how does this live in this new world that's expanding? And they've been using the tools that we've taught them. So you can start, any educator, and you can start today because Unity make that possible and it's free. And I think that's a great starting point. Super.
Thank you.
The second point is, I think, like, if I'm, you know, they will be, you know, the independent schools that decide to grab it, and like your fee-paying schools, of course, they're going to be the ones where headsets are deployed faster, I suspect. But when we think about where I think this has really got potential, we're talking about emerging markets, because they don't have infrastructure to battle with. Oh, but we've always done it this way, and we've always had, and all this noise. You know, what they need is teachers. So they will get the tech if that means that they can plug into a teacher anywhere on the planet that can teach their kids who are in their areas, because they've never had that before. And I think one thing to keep an eye on, which we're really excited by, is, you know, there will always be those that join in the virtual space and learn with a synchronous fashion in real time. But AI can remember that, and AI can be trained to remember those lessons. And you can then deploy that teacher in a decentralized fashion to teach kids anywhere that can connect. And you should make that part free, right? Because if you're a company like me, those that pay fees will already have done it, and you can gift that back, which is the for-profit, non-profit model, which I think is really exciting. And AI will allow that to happen, you know? And I think if faced with, do you want to be educated by a trained AI, you know, that's been working with the best teachers, or not have an education at all? I can tell you the one I'd want my children to do, because it's opportunity, right? And I think that's the picture that gets me so excited is, yeah, you know, there are challenges, but what else is possible here?
Yeah, it's interesting. You just reminded me, I was talking to, I think it's a mutual friend, Darren Coxon, earlier today, and we were just talking about, it's similar conversations that we have on the podcast all the time about the future of school and what is the future of school going to be like. And about, yeah, we had Gerd Leonard on the podcast a few months ago, and he was saying he thinks the next Google, the next kind of major corporation that's going to emerge, will be an education company. And you can kind of see a bubbling away, can't you? You can see Khan Academy starting to kind of, I mean, they're already absolutely massive company, aren't they? But they're starting to maneuver themselves into that zone.
And Synthesis, I don't know if you know that the spin-off from SpaceX, right? Some of his team that started Synthesis.
Yeah, we know Josh well. Josh has been on the podcast a few times. Yeah.
So they announced yesterday, right? Like, if you haven't seen it, their Math Tutor, which, you know, I think is really exciting.
Absolutely. And it's what I do, like a lot of my AI work as well. I say to educators, I always joke because I think I'm going to lose money because schools hire me to come and talk about the practicalities of time saving with AI. And I come in and I go, yeah, should we have a bigger conversation about the future of education? And one of the things I say, and it's what we say on the podcast regularly, is that there is competition waiting in the wings. And I don't think the education sector knows about it. Mm-hmm. And teachers don't have a chance to look at the horizon out of the classroom window because of the shit that's going on inside the classroom and inside the building. Let's be honest. And the education sector's never had to compete. The only real way it had to compete is against itself with its grades, and so that it can survive an Ofsted visit and so on. It's never had to compete with like a corporate market. It's never had to, like the rest of the world does, and so has managed to survive for centuries without that external threat. And we're getting to a point now where I think, like you say, Synthesis, like Khan Academy, like Gerd Leonard says about these companies are going to be huge, where there is going to be there's going to be a crux point where there's going to be an actual choice, and parents, once it reaches the parent level, I think that's when the game's over, really. Once a parent has got a real choice, and not a choice about where to send their kids to school or to homeschool them, I think that's been the choice forever, but actually a choice for an actual better alternative, where, like you say, they're going to be able to go online 3 mornings out of the week and learn from the best minds, whether that be an AI mind or a NASA scientist who teaches them physics because he's got a YouTube channel, or because he's got a metaverse world where he teaches kids at scale because he can do that because of the technology. And I think these I think exactly like what you're saying, the that scalability is going to massively, massively disrupt mainstream education. And personally, I just don't think we're ready for it. And I don't think we'll ever be ready for it. I think we've got some massive shocks coming. So that wasn't a question.
It is deep, right? Because parents, well, actually, there's a rebellion going on, right? And actually, it has been going on with kids for a long time. It was accelerated by the pandemic, right? We've got a well-being crisis, significantly so here in the UK. Children are not engaged, right? There was some recent surveys that like at least 40% don't care about school at all, right? Because they don't feel like they're part of it. They don't feel like it's relevant. You know, classes are getting bigger than ever. Their teachers are just at it. And so that then fuels what happens to teachers, right? Teachers love teaching. They don't love behavior management and everything else that they're being asked to do. So this is why a lot of them leave the profession, because they don't have the right work-life balance. They still, most of them will work, find a way to work with kids. And when all of those start happening, you know, parents really start to take notice, because when education is breaking your child, right? Like when it is affecting your child's well-being, you take action. Because as parents, we want our kids to be happy. We want them to achieve their potential, but actually we want them to be ready for the future, right? And I think this is what's happening, right? We can now quantifiably say that education is not fulfilling those obligations. And so now emerges all of the other incredible ways that kids can get ahead. And they're not all paid, right? A lot of them are emerging where completely free. Mm-hmm. And I think that open source element, I think as you start to see ed tech companies, you know, starting to emerge, keeping that mandate where you can be for profit, but you can also be for, you know, you can also do it the other way too, to give back. And I think that's something that I hope all ed tech companies keep their mind on, right? Is like, how do we grow? How do we win? But actually, how do we give back? Because that's really important for creating the next, you know, the next great minds of this generation, right? It has to come from somewhere.
Yeah, I absolutely agree wholeheartedly with what you're talking about there, that schooling is almost, I know you've not said these words, that schooling is irrelevant. The traditional school model seems irrelevant, but I think there is a movement now. So I said to my, I do this quite a lot on the podcast, so apologies if anybody doesn't really want to know about what my kids do, but I've got a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old. They've done well in school, but despite the schooling, I think, we've got a lovely primary school. I'm a chair of governors there and I love it. But I think my 12-year-old, I was taking a swim in last night and I was saying to her, tell me about what you've learned at school today. I do it all the time. I've changed the language that I use. I don't say, how was school today? Tell me, was school good today? I started asking her, tell me one thing you've learned today, or what did you do in science today? So she's talking to me about how the different acids and alkalines. Great. What did you do with that? Well, we didn't. We just learned which ones were acids and which ones were alkalines. So did you do any testing of that? Were you intrigued or curious about it? She went, not really. So I said to her, what else did you do? Well, in English, we've been given £1 million, like to do a Dragon's Den type pitch to find a product that is this and that and the other. And I was like, and then her eyes started to light up. So when she's starting talking about doing something like creative, when she's thinking about, she's trying to build something for young people, her age, that's going to make money and be sustainable, but do something good in the world. And I'm like, yes to this. But it almost feels like that is the exception and not the norm. So that when they go into a normal class and they're having to do the, this is an acid and this is an alkaline, this is the this is the periodic table. Now, one of my best pals is a chemistry teacher, so I'm not dissing chemistry, but like, is this what we should be doing? Should we be giving this foundational knowledge of things and in the world that we're in, this obsession with kids knowing stuff is just irrelevant.
I would add something to that, is we can, but like, it's not relevant if you're learning it from analog content, like flat piece of paper. You know, if you could create a scenario where they are the scientists and there is a problem to solve, where they have to use their critical thinking and they have to collaborate in teamwork to like work out, because there's something going on in a experience, right? Which is where the VR side come in, then it makes it much more relevant. You see much more retention. There's a purpose, there's direction, you know, and she will absolutely come home and talk about it in terms of, wow, wasn't that fantastic? Because we've plugged into the way the brain was designed to learn, which is experientially. And that is very, very difficult. As you said, it's the exception, it's not the rule. In our classes, right? That we sit kids in for 6 hours and 48 minutes a day, regimented, you know, based on the chronological age, give or plus a year. It just doesn't work, you know? Whereas if you put them in the scenario, because they can go there, right? Magic and storytelling. And I think that is one of the best ways I explain what happens if you've never seen kids going in. It is like the holy grail of education. Zero behavior problems. They're all engaged. Even those who would not dare speak out in a class because they're introverted or they lack confidence, when they go in with the protection of whoever they've designed themselves to be that day, they are 100% switched on and engaging. And it brings it to life, you know? Books. Why do kids not love reading? Well, often there's no connection. You know, that's why as parents, we struggle so hard to figure out, what is it that my kid likes? Is it football? Is it horses, right? But actually, if you can put them on, like literally step inside the pages of the book, because they can do it immersively, you know, it's video games, why they work so well, because they feel like there's a screen, but they feel like they're there, right? There's a story playing out. It's why they go back and try things again. So the immersive side, and as a matter of fact, like I happen to know that a lot of companies that have been entertainment or focused, you know, on creating magic in different ways. So the cinema, right? They are really thinking about moving into the immersive space to see just how far they can push the needle. Yes, for entertainment, of course, there's lots, you know, pick up your Quest or your Pico, there's lots of games, but actually how do we drive this mandate, you know, and it's coming. And I think it's really, really exciting because certainly the teams that I speak to, you know, they've been driving research for a long time, but now it's time for action, right? The tech is now there. Now it's time to action so that we're not just talking about change, we're actually making it happen. And I think that's so exciting to see.
Yeah. Before I move on, I think you said something before, which really like emotionally got me. I think you said something about when education is breaking our children. And I don't know why I'm even saying this, to be honest, but I got like a real emotional response. And I don't know if it's because it's true, because we see it, because I've got a 2- and a 3-year-old who are going to be going into education, mainstream education, in the next year or so. But I just think, fuck, bloody hell, like, what are we doing? Like, if the system itself is, yeah. Anyway, you just said there, and I think you were kind of hinting at something, which kind of builds on what we were saying earlier about big companies getting into education. And I know you're limited in what you can say, but what can you say? Because I don't want to say anything and give it away. So
let's just look at, you know, let's go back to the Vision Pro. Okay, I think what's interesting is AR wasn't used, but they talked a lot about magic. So I think Apple were really clever in their pitch, because that's really what it was in terms of the words. You know, they didn't use metaverse, they used spatial, right? They chose in carefully because they want to stand for something different. And so the ability to create magic in the way that we connect, in the way that we create, in the way that we do our work, but equally, like, who is the big feature, without mentioning education, that shows that actually they are thinking about not just adults, but, you know, Disney. And Disney is all about, you know, magic and storytelling. And I think this is a really important part, because that is what is missing from education, right? There's a lack of connection. There's a lot of lack of engagement. There's a lack of involvement. There's a lack of creating the Disneyland effect, which is you just can't wait to go there, to have that experience. And I think that's what classrooms should be like, right? Like, if we don't get this right, when our kids are in primary school, they're not going to get it later. So when we think about what's coming, as I said, it's the big powerhouses who have the teams. They have the money, for example, because this to create the stuff and to do it right and deploy. But they also have the connections, right? So that if they build the platform, the content creators will want to come to it, and it will encourage more and incubate more to create an entirely new way of learning. Because up to now, what do we have? You know, we have textbooks, we have analog content that pretty much is all designed in the traditional way. Sit here, click this, do that, right? We've not really seen that much innovation. We've had VR for a long time, but that's really been like, put on this and just watch, right? And 6 degrees is about doing. Like, again, experience isn't just about using a couple of senses, it's as many as possible. So the ability to harness that and then to be able to deploy it across as many districts or, you know, to educators, to put the focus on training, right? Like, how do we do this? I think is what I see is a real great potential. You know, it's about getting the content there, making sure it has an education mandate, making it fun, as learning should be fun. And then using all the other pieces that come along with it. I think it's why, like in the States, so you see Dreamscape Entertainment Company, right? They have experiences, but you know, they partnered with the University of Arizona, obviously looking at higher education, but they use some of their experiences to start to look at, actually, if we take this setting and we add a science element of it, like, couldn't we teach biology, not in a lab, but in here, right? And so the higher academic institutions have also wanted to partner with the brands. And so now we see traction and wide attraction. Yes, it's higher education, of course, but when you see them working with high school groups, just a mixed cohort, and children not in VR, achieving C grade, which is like average, and those in VR, no other differences, getting an A grade, people start to pay attention, right? Like, listen, this is actually changing the way that children engage with learning, access learning, retain learning, and then do something with it. And I think that this is why you're going to start to see things happening. Interesting. Meta. Go for it. And then I'll say something about Meta.
Yeah, a lot of what we talked about, big companies getting into education, you're talking about entertainment. Are we looking at, in the next few years, the Disney education system, the global Disney education system?
I mean, wouldn't that be amazing? I hate to say it.
I don't know. I think that's why I'm asking it, because I don't know.
I have 4 kids, and I'm telling you what. I mean, again, my 9-year-old, sometimes he shows up on my stuff because he's just so honest, right? He's your classic, I don't like school. Like, I have to sit here. I sit here for this many minutes. He's very capable. Why am I doing this? This is not what, you know, he's the classic situation, but he's also very lucky that, you know, it hasn't tipped into his mental well-being, you know, so I keep an eye on that. But I'm telling you, if I were to take them to a theme park, Universal, Disney, even if they weren't feeling well, not, they would be there. Why? Because it's fun, because it's entertaining, because there's magic and storytelling, right? And I think that's really what we should be aiming for. So if the big Disney's or the Universals or the Marvels or, you know, the Lucasfilms or the Netflix get behind it and start pushing out great content that's been created in collaboration with educators, I think everybody wins. I really do.
I absolutely agree. And the fact is that the pull and attraction of Disney, so like every time a new movie's out, my 12-year-old and 9-year-old are like, yep. Disney Plus was like not even an option for us to have in our house. When So we've watched Avatar 2 already, but we'll be watching it again. And like as soon as that came out, they were like, "Dad, it's out. Way of Water is out. We need to watch that this weekend." So it's like they have that the hook. And I also think there is there's something that sits in there. We don't want it just to be entertainment. And I think this is, I'm wondering if that's where the kind of reticence might be there or hesitation with Dan there. I don't know. Maybe I'm right. We don't want just to entertain our kids and like the next thing. But what I heard you talking about earlier in the conversation, Melissa, was this idea of that immersive element. So we want to make sure that young people, whoever's learners, let's call them learners, are feeling they're connected. There is something. So I went to Disney when I was 14 years old, and I still remember the feeling of being in a immersive haptic space when you thought that rats were mice were coming out of the screen. They're running around, and you can feel it on the back of your legs, and actually it's just air, and then there's water coming at you, and there's that. Whether we'll get that from our TVs, I'm not saying that, or from our VR goggles. What I'm saying is that we need to have that immersive experience where people and then look at the learning that can come from that. So I think about this idea of what we tend to do in education, is in my experience of it, is if we do something that's really cool and engaging, we don't then say, okay, well, what did that tell us? How do we reflect on that? We do a really good experience, a really good entertainment, but don't do the learning bit. Or we do the really good learning bit and there's no experience. So surely there is something that can bridge that, like you're talking about, that augmented element. Surely there's something that bridges that gap.
Also, too, it's the ability, I think, it's the ability to actually not just say to kids, like, imagine, like, we're, you know, schools are great about, we want to foster imagination and creativity, but like, do you or not, right? Because usually as soon as the imagination, the creativity kicks off, oh, that's it. We have to stop. We have to move on to something, right? Education just has these really weird parallel universes. But you can, and maybe the example, I'll talk about Meta, because I think it's fascinating. I was invited by Nick Clegg and his team to come and join his education roundtable. So Meta get, you know, obviously last week, like there was lots of memes going around with Zuckerberg and all sorts of stuff. But here's what I would say is, my experience with them is they have not abandoned the metaverse. I think what they have done is they've moved from a big splash, changing their name, and all of the things that happened after that, to a vision for how do we do this step by step so we know where we want to be. Is that a 10-year vision? Is it 5-year? And we begin to put the meaningful pieces in place to get there. And one of the things I spoke about, certainly that I've seen, is, you know, in English, and this, I mean, I grew up in Canada, but this happens everywhere. You know, we read Shakespeare, but again, like, it's hard to imagine what that was like, also because the language is different. But in our school, we created a virtual globe theater that a lot of the kids can't even ever go to. They're not in London, you know, some of the Ukrainian refugees. So, you know, for them, this is big. Some of them are English as second language. They created their avatar. So they had to do meaningful look into the Elizabethan era, right? Look at the language, look at the architectural structure, like, you know, look at equality, like they were all men. So create the entire ecosystem around it and then put them inside and allow them to create their own modern day version with the help of AI, you know, what is going on in Othello or Macbeth or whatever, and actually bring it to life. And I think that sense of, we can imagine, but then we can take you to that place and then let your imagination run wild when you're in there, come back out of that environment and then apply it. So the work that the kids did after this experience, you know, when we asked them to sit down and write about, you know, the significance of the balcony scene in Romeo and Juliet or whatever, their ability to process that is fundamentally off the charts in terms of having that connection with what has been going on. We saw it in a similar fashion. You know, we were looking at space exploration. Primary kids love that, but like, even by looking at a picture, it's helpful. But like, can you imagine what it's like to be on Mars? No, put on your spacesuit and go there. Now you start understanding, and some incredible philosophical stuff that like 6-year-olds were talking about. You know, hold on, somebody just put a dinosaur, they're extinct. But, and then somebody else said, well, it wouldn't matter. Like, they can't be here anyway. So don't put your great white shark. Why not? Well, why not? Unpacking, right? It's very difficult. You can't live on Mars, right? We don't have the fundamentals. And like the teachers and us, we just sat back and let it happen because we allowed for the connections to be made and the experiences to be had and that magic to begin to happen in an environment where all players had a voice. They were all there inhabiting the avatar they felt most comfortable in. And I think that is one of the key things that I see, right? We can create that space and make sure that children are part of what it means to work in an ethical way in the space, because they will tell you if you ask them, right, what some of these challenges are and what they think they should do about it, and actually allowing them to be part of the process, not just the receiver of what adults think they need to be experiencing.
Yeah, we just to add to that, really, in my old job, we invested heavily in immersive technology, and we were with students who, it was an FE, so we had students who had failed English GCSE in high school, and then they were studying the Great Gatsby, and we had some amazing technologists who recreated a 1920s socialite New York party. The students went in, I know it's not about the grades, but just in this example, they were literally going from grade 2-3 GCSE, retaking or doing exam questions the next day, and going up to grade 7, 8, and 9 because that they were required to know the dynamics of the relationships between the characters, and they just couldn't grasp it in a classroom. They just, a teacher reading it to them and talking about it just went over their heads. But when they were in the party themselves and they were experiencing and seeing the dynamic between the characters and around them, their learning was off the charts, really. So it's amazing. And there's some cool stuff going on with AI at the moment around students being able to create within immersive spaces.
I've seen you've released information about your virtual world that
you can
allow them to be part of the creation story.
Yeah, I've got, it's on my website. It's like literally just a half an hour tutorial about how you can create, just bring a few tools together. Like there's a great tool called Blockade Labs where you can just literally type in the type of 360 world you want created, and it will create it. It's still got a long way to go, but it's coming on leaps and bounds on a daily basis, that tool. It's amazing. And then I was working with some primary school kids up in Kendall a few weeks ago, and like literally 8 to 9 year olds were creating their own virtual worlds using artificial intelligence, and then being able to put headsets on and go into their own virtual worlds that they literally just created 10 minutes ago. And the power of that was absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. What I wanted to talk about as well is, while we're on the subject of Meta, I'm sure you probably read the leaked memo from Mark Zuckerberg about the Apple launch, and one of the things that quelled his worries, I think, was that Apple did not seem to focus on Metaverse at all in terms of bringing people together. I mean, they talked about accessing FaceTime through their new headset, but they didn't talk about Metaverse worlds and all that type of thing, which I think when a lot of people now think of headsets, that's what they think of, because Meta's pushed the conversation in that direction. Mm-hmm. Apple seemed to stay well clear of that. What do you think is going on there?
I think, again, it's Apple's focus on an evolution, not a revolution, right?
So you think they're eventually going to get there?
If you look at the way the headset's designed, right, it's designed to allow, once the content is there, adoption. So if you're not comfortable being fully in VR, and let's face it, like most adults do have a level of cyber sickness when they're in, because we just don't think like that. Like I watch my own kids playing Minecraft and I feel sick. I'm like, what? But you can turn it up, right? There's a dial. So if you want the fully immersive experience, and you saw, I think in the piece where there's a female on an airplane and she dials it straight in, right? It allows for you to move fluidly between, do you want something just to show up in the physical space that you're in, because you're in an office or because you're talking to people or whatever, or do you really want to dial it up? And I think giving people the choice is really a smart option. I think also not using buzzwords, creating their own. If you listen carefully, I saw someone actually ran the script through AI, and like there was a post about how many words came up when or didn't come up, right? And I think that's strategic, isn't it, in terms of what they want to present. But really, for me, like this creates a halo effect. We have great relationship with the team at Pico. And actually, like, they were really excited by the launch because it moves everybody forward, right? The more that we can see use cases for this type of technology to support the way we live, work, learn, the more willing the global audience is to begin to embrace it. And, that allows for creators to create amazing apps. You know, maybe the reason why Apple didn't really share too much, you know, synchronous real-time stuff is because maybe those need to be created by the creators. You know, my team are certainly, there's about 46 videos that Apple have released ahead of the SDK. Like, my developers are all over it. And like, what's interesting is education wasn't mentioned. Kids, it's there. There's Disney, there's Marvel. But if you look at the documentation, like, there's some significant movement, I think, from Apple in terms of how they're going to connect the education sector to blend this physical and online world in real time.
It is interesting when you say that, because I noticed when I was watching it the amount of times they said, and later on today, there's going to be sessions for developers and to develop these tools. They constantly peppered that throughout their presentation. So you could tell it was kind of like, look, we're providing the hardware, the foundation of the software, and now we need you guys to build on top of that. I suppose like Apple have done with the App Store over the last 16 years, I guess. And also, I think if Apple had come out and said, right, we've created our own metaverse, and it was the crap graphics that we kind of see in Horizons, Horizons and things. I think it would have damaged their brand, I think. And I wonder if they're waiting for something. I know Zuckerberg said on, I forget what he said it on now, I think he might be talking to Gary Vee, and he talked about how eventually he thinks we'll have kind of realistic avatars that actually look like us and are. And we're kind of seeing that with AI at the moment. That ability to be able to do that is pretty much here, and the accuracy of it will be within a year or so. Will be amazing.
I giggle and laugh because I have to tell you, probably like 100% of the time, if given the choice, the kids want to be the dancing weird looking carrot. Right. Like, they do not want to be. They do not want to be that. Right? They again, it's the fun element. Like, okay, maybe that makes us as adults feel better about what we can and can't do. And there are certainly use cases. Like, I think if you look at healthcare, there's probably some great use cases there why you might want it to look, you know, like us.
I think you're right. I mean, look at how we do selfies. We put filters on, we have an angle.
This goes on and this is happening. I don't put any heart emojis or sparkles. But Dan, if that's what you're into, man, that's cool.
I was on a call, I probably shouldn't say this, but I was on a call with someone the other day. I'm not making a judgment. I thought it was pretty cool, actually. And she moved her head and all of her makeup and everything stayed where it was for a second. but it looks so realistic. And I thought, actually, that's pretty cool. If someone can do that, and I think that's...
I suppose it's no different than when we put a background on our cameras and say that we're in a fancy, swanky house. And
when I say I had a friend who did that, it was me. But
you know, it's really interesting, okay? So, and maybe it wasn't picked up, but there was a piece of news, maybe it was last week, that Apple just bought, did you hear this? They bought an AR headset startup called Mira, M-I-R-A.
All right.
And Mira... What's fascinating is they're kind of, you know, an LA based, but basically they plug into your phone. So they augment what's on your phone in front of you. Now what, come on, if we start to think now about what could Apple's play, why would they, because I think there's a hedge here too about potentially understanding, like, again, the leap is also like, if we could have something that we can use on our phone and it brings us together. So I mean, have a look at it. It's really quite fascinating.
It's interesting you say that, because when I watched the Apple launch, I was a bit, to be honest, I know you were excited and I was watching your posts on LinkedIn while it was happening.
Yeah.
I was a bit underwhelmed because I did kind of feel like it was an iPhone in a headset. That's what it felt like. I was just like, oh, it's just an iPhone in AR.
I tell you what, because like if you were to ask, and it's weird too, because I did a poll of teachers, right? And, you know, we're working with some great teams. Some of them you work with as well. You know, the more that we can get the headsets out and like get them in them, right? It just sells itself basically. And they're convincing. But there was a play around, for me anyways, why excitement? The biggest barrier I have when working in the immersive space is, again, it's you either immersive or you're not. So you're in and you learn all this stuff and there's all these cool science experiments going off, but like you can't actually really do work in there. So you have to stop, you have to take the headset off, and then you have to run back to your computer if you're a student or whatever to then show that knowledge. And I think what I love is the tools are going to be straight inside the Apple. So you will be able to literally do your work and capture that learning right in the space. And I think that's the piece that's been missing, right? It's still either you're in or you're not, and you have to take what you've learned in. But now with what Apple are bringing in terms of their just tools and functions, you'll be able to open up your computer inside, make your notes, draw your stuff, and capture it in real time. So again, for teachers assessing kids, you know, AI and machine learning can help you. We move away from like, I'm going to just do a multiple choice quiz, because that's just still using old tech in a new space, right? But actually, if you could fundamentally make your observational notes because you have access to your tool straight inside the space in real time, like again, like think about how much time that saves.
It is cool. I thought, didn't Meta strike a deal with Microsoft to have Office within Meta to have something similar?
There's a great tool called Immersed, I think, which is designed to have, like, you can open up almost like a hologram of your computer. So
I've done that. Yeah. Actually, I take the mic out of Meta Horizons, but Meta Horizons workroom it's called? Mm-hmm. Workplace. I think I like it. I just don't know anybody else
who uses it. We did a trial of it, didn't we?
We went on it.
We did it together.
I don't know anybody else who uses it, but it's one of those things where I'm like, if I knew other people who used it, I'd probably be in there all the time. I really like it. And the functionality with the whiteboard, how you can get up from the desk and collaborate and things.
That's what they love the most. Like I think about some of the immersive lessons, and actually funny enough at the school, like we have the whole units meet us in the metaverse. So all the kids are now bringing their parents in, right? It's great, but they love the tool. They love the ability to not just like stand around and watch. They love the doing, right? It's the doing aspect, but also there's doing in terms of experiences. And then there's doing in terms of like, you can pull up the whiteboard and you can capture it. But at the moment, like unless you're recording the virtual session, it's still not captured anywhere, right? And I think that's something that the Apple tech is going to be able to do. Like you will literally be able to open up your iCloud account inside and work in there and it comes out. And, you know, again,
that's cool because that's real life functionality, isn't it? Whereas with Meta, like I haven't touched it's hung up on the door behind me and I haven't took it out of its case probably for about 2 months now because I just got bored of... I got really excited about putting it on and going into Horizon Worlds and then going to the virtual pub they've got there and just having a walk around and but I just found it after a while I just found it weird. I just found it and then I was like, I think it's just gimmicky. I feel like it's just a gimmick at the moment. But actually what you're saying is this is real functionality if you can access the tools that you would normally be using anyway within this world.
One thing we went to recently, we were invited with Pico to go to the Bat Show, which was great, right? I was more cared about getting an audience of like kids because that's the best part of Bat when the kids come around and try your stuff. And one of the things I was saying to teachers, you know, and a lot of them are state school, right? Like you're in East London. So was, you know, if we think about the ways that we can use this tech to use it as like our assistant, right? Like our teaching assistant. Like how, if we think of it in that mandate, how can we use it? And, you know, a lot of times the kids love going in. We certainly build a lot of games around STEM. So actually my favorite right now is like work in a pizza shop, but it's all around math, like fractions, there's tanagrams to open the pizza box. Like it's crazy. But again, like you're supporting and in a class, if you've got 30 kids, and you've got the ability and no teaching assistant because schools don't have them, but you've got some headsets that you can even sign out. You know, some of the kids in your class can be doing these learning games, right? Where they're not bothering anybody because they're learning and it gives you time to then work in a smaller group setting with kids in real time. And again, some of these things I think are emerging, but the use case has to be there and they have to be, I think for education, like it has to, I'm a big believer in 6 degrees of freedom because it does get bored if you're just going in and standing there. Like I've done enough of that, right? You just go in, you look around. Great. But after a while, it's pretty boring, right? But if you can go in and have experiences that bring that learning to life or allow you to continue to practice that learning in fun and entertaining ways, you know, that feels like a game. Like the kids always say, wow, I love this game.
I reckon I'll buy one.
I was at the Apple store in a queue. No, I'm joking.
That's where I'm at. I think I probably won't tell my wife how much they are, and just make out that it was just given to me as a present from somebody.
Apple, are you listening? Do they listen? You know, we've got a team of educators here willing to pilot.
100%. Yeah, maybe we need to send this in. I don't know. Tim Cook, should we see him into this on LinkedIn? I don't know. So there must be somebody else. Let's get it in. We'll try them. We'll do some cool stuff on it. But I think from an education perspective, that, like you said, ability to use the tools that we're already using, you both said that, to do that in an augmented way, collaborative, but also being able to use that real power of the immersive elements that you are in that space, and to gamify it, to make it gamified almost, an experience, it could make a big difference. I still think we've got some work to do. I would love it if they were this. I think they will be.
I say too, we've not seen, you know, obviously we see specs, but comfort is a big one. You know, and especially for small heads, you know, that's really important.
Yeah.
About how that works. And again, like nobody's been in there for hours and hours on end, but you're right. Like, until we can see and try it out, although, you know, connections within the network who've had that opportunity, you know, they're saying like, it's a significant, you know, improvement, and, you know, let's hope so. I think.
Yeah.
One of the things that nobody's really talked about, if you go back to that launch of the Vision Pro, was when it suddenly turned into an episode of Black Mirror and that guy was recording all the memories with his kids. I thought that was a bit interesting, a bit strange, that if they're in go on.
In color. No, it's just this point, right? Like, you know, we obviously, the last time we were here, we were with our friends Insomnium, and, you know, and it's great and they're doing amazing things, but, you know, they have a live forever mode that they've been talking about, you know, the ability to record. And actually that's what that's doing, isn't it? It's like a live forever mode. I think one thing that I'm really interested to see also in the same level that wasn't talked about is there's quite a lot of tech regarding holograms. I think that's going to be available in this headset. They didn't really unpack it, but again, I think that's going to be quite an interesting use case. If that's a technology that we see emerge,
right? It's interesting because that's where Mark Zuckerberg seems to think it'll go over the next decade, doesn't he? That eventually will not be kind of in a VR world. We'll be in a holographic world.
You see some of those interview boxes, don't you? So with the holograms, you know, I don't know.
Oh yeah, I think Google just released one, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, but actually, you know, Google and Samsung, so they're going to be the next like major headset that, you know, apart from like a new entrant into the market. So we'll see, you know, what they imagine. And that, you know, again, I think the key thing here is adoption. You know, who is going to be really using this tech when it's all there? Well, hopefully it's us, but it's going to be them, right? Those that are still sitting in classrooms and allowing them to explore, and people think about that as a mandate. Then I think actually the next big, is it a gigacorn, whatever you want to call it, is, you know, is it education? Because I think the sector is ripe for change. And certainly there's a lot of great people like you guys and the people that we're all connected with that are really pushing, you know, the rebellion from within.
and I don't think it's ever been closer than it has been today. And I think it's just going to keep getting closer. Melissa, loved having you on. Yeah. I love your insights. I love your enthusiasm for the future of education. And so thanks for sharing that with us.
We'll see you, I think, in a few weeks anyways, here in London, and then at Cottesmore as well. So,
yes. Yeah, I'll see you then.
Some of those events. I don't know if they were on your list. But,
of course,
you know,
they were. Do you mean his Billy Big Bollocks list? BBB list?
Yeah, I'm going to go. Actually, now, after this, I'm going to go and I'm going to post and I'm going to put my own on. So I'll see you there.
Yeah, I love it. Just before we go, where can people find more about you and the work that you're doing and your podcast and whatever else?
Yeah, you know what? I think LinkedIn's such a great, great network, right? In terms of driving, you know, professional reach. So a lot of what we do is there. We have a great group, which is, I know we mentioned a couple people on the call today. So Darren, you know, educators, just like us, who are building a community, and we're going to release like a community where it's going to have a huge amount of free resources coming. So LinkedIn's a great place. But you can always find me at Sophia, you know, have a look. reach out. You know, we are more than happy to help wherever we can. And the more educators who can think differently, you know, well, that's actually, I didn't mean that in terms of the context, but, you know, again, if we can think differently, then I think yes. That's an incredible future. Yeah. How do you see branding? It's there. Obviously, yeah, I have yeah. That, yeah.
Steve, the spirit of Steve Jobs still lives on. Love it. Yeah, thank you.
Amazing. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Melissa.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
1, 2.
Lovely, great that.
I'm not talking to you. I'm like, wait, I have to say something about that. I have to say something about that. You know, just such a good vibe. Really good.
Are we still live? I pressed.